Let's hear these words from Scripture. From the Gospel of Mark, chapter 12, verses 38 through 44. He sat opposite the 38. As he taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses for the sake of appearance. They say long prayers. They will receive greater condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more in than those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put everything in she has, all she has to live on." The living word of our Lord. Thanks be to God. I want to share with you a story. About a year ago, a gentleman came into my office and he said, "I don't normally do this kind of thing, but I've had a real bad streak." And I said, "That's what I'm here for. I'd love to hear your story." He began to talk about how he had lost his job 6 months ago. The savings account had been dwindled down to nothing. And his wife also lost her small job as well. And they were living on unemployment for a while, but they couldn't make ends meet. And he was nervous because he didn't think he'd have food on the table that night for the first time in his entire adult life for his family, his wife and his two kids. And he begged me to offer him some food assistance. That was at the time that Heather and I had met and discussed that we weren't going to offer food cards anymore because they were often taken advantage of. We were often taken advantage of as a church. And so we were trying to figure out other ways we could use our discretionary fund to best serve the community. And so I explained to the gentleman that there's other ways to receive food, and I told him about Franklin Community Center and how wonderful they are, and that he could go there and get a bag of food, and he was excited about that. And that was one way that I was able to help him. But that's not all. You see, he then told me about how, well, his electric bill kind of got out of control, and now they're threatening to turn the electric off the very next day was the cutoff date. And he then further explained, and we've been living in this apartment for our whole lives, but I can't afford the rent. I'm 2 months back, Pastor. And the landlord doesn't like that very much. And I said, "That's where we can help you." And so that day, Heather and I have a rule that we don't spend $200 out of our discretionary fund without talking to one another. So I called Heather and I said, "Heather, I want to make a large payment out of the discretionary fund for this gentleman. I'm not sure how much, but here's his story." And Heather said, "Whatever you need to do, help him out." So I talked to the guy and we got a number that would cover his entire electric bill. So I had Amber write the check. We sent a check to National Grid that day, and his electric bill was paid and covered. And I also was able to give him a substantial amount of money towards his rent that he was able to fend off the landlord from an eviction that day for the foreseeable future. He was beaming with joy and excitement. Couldn't believe that there were people this generous in the world he only wanted $20 for the supermarket. And we gave him over $700 for his bills and rent. He was moved deeply. He left my office in tears and excitement. It's a moment that Heather and I often forget to share with you about how your money that you offer to this church is used to transform lives. This story doesn't end there, though. About a month ago, I was in my office, and a man walked in who looked vaguely familiar, but I couldn't remember him. It was the same guy. And I thought, maybe he needed something else. It's been about a year, you know. And he came in and he said, "Pastor, I just came to say thank you." I said, what for? He's like, "You have no idea the impact you had on me." Shortly after that day, I got a job working at a Stewart's as an assistant manager, and my wife got hired in a local school district as a teaching aide, and we're back on our feet. All our bills are paid up, we're living comfortably. I'm even able to take my family out to dinner once a month, a special treat the kids love. But this month, I don't want to take my family out to dinner. This month, I want to make a donation to this church, because this church transformed my life. There's nothing I like better than going out to dinner with my family, but I can do that anytime now because of this church. And so I'll miss this month so that next month I can take them out again and again and again. As he handed me a fresh, just out of the ATM, $20 bill, a tear ran down his eye. And I took the gift graciously and said, "We are so thankful that you wanted to pay us back in some small way. We are thankful that you are part of this community, even though you don't worship with us. And we're happy to help you in any time, in any way that you need." And he left my office. And I then got back to my work. And about, 4 o'clock or so, I was about ready to leave, and I started packing my stuff, and I saw the $20 bill, and I thought, "Oh, I gotta go put this in Jim Douglas's box before I forget." So I walked down to the office, got an envelope, and began to write on it, "Pastor's Discretionary Fund." That's where he wanted it to go back to giving to the community. So I started to write on the envelope, "Pastor's Discretionary Fund," and began to put it into Jim's box. And as I did, I was overcome with gratitude and joy. And I wept in the office, thanking God that this church can make such a difference in somebody's life. That our extravagant giving can transform lives in ways that sometimes we're not even aware of. And I felt sorry that Heather and I don't always share that story well. That's just one example of how this church's extravagant giving makes a difference in lives. That's the kind of giving that we do when we act like the widow in this story. But this story is actually more difficult than that. When you read this text, one scholar says you have to choose as a preacher whether you're going to talk about this woman, this widow, as an example of generosity. Is Jesus pointing her out to be an example of how we should give, to give all we have in order to, help the church? Or if you read that verse beforehand, and it says that Jesus is cursing the scribes, a member of the religious institution, for devouring widows' houses, and then think about Jesus pointing to a woman and saying, look at her who gives all she has to live on. Is Jesus actually pointing her out as a victim of the institution? That shook my world when I was researching this week, and I've been wrestling with that tension ever since. What is Jesus talking about here? Are those really the only possibilities? Yes, the ancient church was corrupt, and the scribes for sure used the resources for their own good so that they might look powerful and mighty in the eyes of the local folk. And you know what? To be honest, sometimes the church today is corrupt and uses the money in ways that don't promote health and wholeness in the world. So is that what Jesus is talking about? Are we supposed to just give up on the church? And are we all victims paying into this treasury? Or is Jesus really calling us to look like this widow and give all that we have? And is it and is it really better for somebody to only give, to be giving 2 pennies? And do we forget about all those people who give abundantly out of their abundance, and if they're not as valued as a widow? Which one is true? Where's the truth in this? This text is difficult, and we don't often know how to use it or read it or preach it. Money is difficult too, just in general, isn't it? If you are anything like me, your day, the Saturday before Pledge Sunday or Stewardship Sunday, might look a lot like that video. I sit down and I make my budget that year, or for the year that day, which Eileen is always happy for because otherwise I won't do it. And I look through and I start write the number that I think I want to give to the church up in the top corner. And then I go through and I list out all the things that I have to pay for, or I think I have to pay for. And that number shrinks ever so often. If you're like me, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't feel guilty about it. There is reality that we have to live into in our world. But there might be a third way to handle money and to handle generosity in general. Maybe it's not that we have to be like the widow and give everything at the expense of talking about those who give from their abundance. Maybe it's not that we give to a corrupt institution. Maybe when we're offering our gifts with extravagant generosity to the church, we're believing in the prosperity of God. We're believing that in the midst of all that we call church, that sometimes is ugly and not light and we don't want to be a part of, usually not in this particular congregation, I'm talking about the denomination at times here, but perhaps we're trusting that God, in spite of all that, can still make a difference in people's lives. See, the widow that day offers her whole life to God. It's not about the money that she's put into the plate. That day, Jesus says she has offered all that she has to live on to God. In our book that we've been working through, the five practices of a fruitful congregation, yes, by Robert Schnazy, the principle we're talking about today is extravagant generosity. And he identifies extravagant generosity in this way, the way that I think is a third way. This is when we offer, when we begin to change our lives in a way that is offering our whole self for the purposes of Christ. That is extravagant generosity. It's not dependent on the amount that you put in the offering plate on Sunday. It's not dependent on whether the church has a deficit or a surplus. It's dependent on our response to God's love in our lives. That when we look at what God has done and God is capable of doing through us, we are so moved with the gratitude and joyfulness, like I was that afternoon after seeing God work in that man's life, that I want to respond to God. And one of the ways we do that is financially supporting the institution that God has ordained to do God's work. And so, generosity is much more than just financial giving. Generosity is about changing our lives to be oriented to following Christ so that all who might encounter us will see the generosity of God in us. So that all that we do as a community, as a church, as a congregation, as individuals, reflects who Christ is. A generous God who will help you in times of need, who will stand by you when you are sick, who will care for you in the darkest of moments. That's what we do with our resources at Saratoga Springs UMC. It's stories like the gentleman who came into my office. It's stories like the widow in the treasury that remind us what we do when we give to the church, when we offer extravagantly, that we change lives. It's then that we are able to create for the world a sanctuary that offers relief in times of difficulty. When we offer hope in the midst of despair. When we offer generosity in the midst of emptiness. This is the church. Sometimes we get it wrong, as Jesus pointed out with the scribes. But sometimes we get it so right, that we move others to respond to God in unexpected ways, like showing up at a church on a random afternoon to give away their family's meal out, that the church might know their gratitude. I bet that that's not the only story that's out there about this church working to create generosity in the world. In fact, I'm quite sure, and Robert Schneezy in his book suggests that we ask this question of each other, I'm sure that each one of you, or many of you, could share a moment when this church or somebody from this church has acted with such generosity that it caught you off guard and changed your life. I actually want to hear them. Does anybody have a story of when something happened in your life? Yeah.
Well, I was married to a volunteer to food, and I was one of the supplies that we could eat. Several times I had a look at the dollar store, the first time, and she turned to me and not after I was doing that, so I was in the birthday. And she said, I want to be part of this community.
That's great. So the generosity you are offering through our connection with the food pantry transformed somebody in behind you's life, and they offered money to help too. Anybody else? I know it's hot and you want to get out of here, but there's got to be more stories.
Okay. When I first came to this church, I was looking for a Sunday school for my son, and I was in the Northwest. And Reverend Carol Smith and I start talking, and I mentioned that I was a part of a Brooklyn United Methodist Church 40-some years ago, and I mentioned the minister, and it just so happened that him and Camilla had went to college in the 1950s.
Wow.
With this reverend, and they had traveled and did mission work. And he and his wife sought the reverend out, and now we have reunited, and that enticed me to join, that they would take the time to go and relocate someone, and that endeared
right.
My heart.
Somebody offered the generosity of their time and love to offer you a connection that you had lost. And they reconnected with them too. What a great story. Other examples of generosity you've experienced in your life? You guys just aren't talkative today. Oh, Anna. So Heather came to visit you in the hospital, which was a generous gift of her time and her care for you. Yeah. Donna?
A few years ago, I helped with a fundraiser for a child and her father that were both very ill with his family. For the love of that family, and you remember a few years ago. That family, Lexi's doing wonderful. She's still in the hospital quite a bit with a family count, but because of the generous donation of our entire congregation, they are able to travel with her to Boston. They are people who are credit cards, people who are doctors, people donating money. And I think at least 16 of the whole bus came to the dinner that was done by person. Our church actually stood behind that family so much. I was so impressed with the generosity of our congregation.
Great, yeah. Our financial support of a family, yeah.
Yes, I'd like to just comment about the church's mission team. Some of you are going to have names, and that probably will, and David Jets and others who are going to be on that trip. And they told stories to me about the families that they help who are living in such despair. And the hope and the generosity of this church goes up with them every year.
Yes. The generosity of our support to the main mission program is one that is unprecedented in other ways. We support that community in marvelous ways. And we give thanks to all of you who have been on mission trips, who have donated to help the mission team in whatever way, because that's one way that we have a large impact on a community. Bill?
Well, Seventh-day Adventist pastor changed my attitude toward giving. We were talking over coffee one day, and I was lamenting that we didn't have many people with tithes. And he said, well, that's a condition of membership in our church. Everybody has some tithes. And then he asked me, and I said, well, we tithe. And he said, well, this is a sacrifice. And I said, no, we've been doing it for years. 90% of what we have, we can spend the way we want. No, it's not a sacrifice. He said, most of the members of our church do a second tithe, which is called the sacrificial tithe. The first tithe is mandatory, the second tithe is voluntary, sacrificial. We went home and talked about that, and we, for the last 20-some years, we give 20%.
Wow.
Some of that is charity, and 10% of it is supposed to be church. And you know what? It's not less than
Thanks.
I'm not ready to do another 10, but...
Thank you. You've changed your life with your giving and the lives of many people in this congregation, for sure. Helen?
I sang in the choir of the church that I came from in Missouri. And sometimes the choir had to sing both services. So in between, the choir members worked up some coffee time, and then, which wasn't around earlier. But when we started having coffee, people started asking, can we have some too? And all of a sudden, we turned from a cold church to a white, giving and good church, and everybody came to it.
Thanks. So by just simply offering coffee as a choir, you grew the giving in your church, and people started feeling welcomed there. That's wonderful. Any other stories of generosity? Glenn?
Shortly after we came to this church, right after we rushed to the hospital, and we had to take it. I was alone. I didn't know about it. Showed up at the hospital and waited to get the 6 to 8 hours how long that surgery was. And from that point on, a lot of support while practicing with a long period of rehab. Then last year, when we went to the hospital and got called persons from the church, 21 different families, every day after I got home, we would get around, throw up meals and stuff through the house.
Great. Great. Gail, and that will be our last one. Right. Our work with the track workers has been it was a historical part of our identity. It's a partnership that we would love to have strengthened again, and we actually have an exciting thing occurring where we might be doing some work with them more closely than we have in the last 2 years that we've been here. So there's work coming in that way, and that is a way that we have historically been generous and are continuing to seek ways to be generous. Another exciting opportunity that's coming through our church and Franklin Community Center that I'm excited to talk to you about is a new partnership we've reached with them. See, Franklin Community Center has a program called Project Lift, which many of you might know about. It's an after-school care program where they enrich children's education and life relationship skills. They work hard at doing this, and they've been very successful over their time doing this. And as a board member at the FCC, I was sitting and listening to them talk about their hopes for the future. One thing they really wanted to do was enhance summer camp opportunities for kids. And well, you know, Methodists, we're really good at summer camp. And so I said, and so she had even mentioned the word Sky Farm in her little conversation about this. And I immediately called the next day the director of the Project Lift program and said, can we have a meeting? I'd like to find a way to support kids going to Sky Farm and through our church. I talked to Heather about it, and Heather said, I think we can do better than that. She called her friend Mike Huber, who is the director of camps for the entire annual conference of Upper New York. He came to that meeting. We all sat together. Upper New York Annual Conference has gifted to Project Lift 15 camperships, or an equivalent of $7,000, so that 15 kids could go to camp. We, Heather and I, then said, well, we could do something too, and we pledged on your behalf 5 camperships to Sky Farm for Project Lift Children. And so this is a partnership that we're looking to continue for years to come. We've created a Project Lift Sky Farm Campership Fund that if you wish to support, you can donate to.
Yes, please.
Yeah. As we try to fill those 5, that promise of 5 gifts. The United Methodist Men have already made a significant donation to help us in that, and Church and Society have helped begin that fund. So we're excited about that, and that's a way that our extravagant giving changes lives. By creating partnerships with our community work programs, by doing the things that we shared today, this is the church at work. This is the purpose of our giving. This is why we give. We have to have a foundation for that giving, which is our annual budget. And we have to be able to fill that budget so that we can do this extra mile giving to make a difference in the world. And I just want to end on this note. You might not be aware of this, but our $450,000 a year budget, that's what we spend on the general budget of the church. That's our staff, our administrative costs, all that stuff. That's only one part of the giving of our congregation. In 2015, this church also gave $150,000 to special funds and projects to transform people's lives. So on top of our general budget, we do so much more. We do so much good in this world. We are a force to be reckoned with in Saratoga Springs when it comes to sharing God's love. Because of your generosity and our collective commitment to serving the purposes of Christ. May our lives start to look like Robert Snagy asks us for them to look, offering all that we have, our whole life, that we might fulfill God's purposes. Amen. Let us sing together, Halle, Halle, Halle. There's some verses on the screen that aren't in your book, so pay attention.